All right, well, let's press on rather than taking the break now. Denise in the room? Denise is in the room. So we're moving now to paper 14. Denise?
Thank you, Wayne.
By the way, before Denise begins, I told her I thought this paper was excellent, and then she pointed out to me that I didn't understand it. So I'll leave it to you to determine which of those.
Okay, thank you, Wayne. The purpose of Agenda Paper 14 is to analyze a request received to clarify the application of paragraph 78 of IS 36, Impairment of Assets. This paragraph sets out the guidance for considering recognized liabilities when these are inseparable from the cash generating unit for determining the recoverable amount of a CGU. So the submitter observes that many have struggled with the application of this paragraph and asks the Interpretations Committee to review it. And the submitter is providing some suggestions on how this paragraph could be improved. We analyzed the submission and observed that the approach in paragraph 78 of IS 36 provides a straightforward, cost-effective method for performing a meaningful comparison of the measures that are involved in impairment testing. We also think that this approach is consistent with the requirement in IS 36 to reflect the risks specific to the asset and to reflect the risks specific to the liability in accordance with IS 37 provisions, contingent liabilities and contingent assets. And we think that the methodology in paragraph 78 of IS 36 is clear, and reason why we propose issuing a tentative agenda decision to address this issue. Now, we perform outreach with national standard setters, securities regulators, and global accounting firms, and I would like to give you just a quick update of the results of this outreach. We asked them how widespread this issue they thought it is, and to what extent there is significant diversity in practice. And we receive 18 responses, 2 from regulators, 10 from national standard setters, 6 from accounting firms. And standard setters and regulators did not find any diversity in practice or any problems in the application of paragraph 78 of IS 36. However, guess what? From the six accounting firms who responded to our outreach request, 4 mentioned that they have encountered some diversity in practice regarding not only the application of paragraph 78, but also other aspects of IS 36, mainly related as to how and whether to include deferred taxes when applying the guidance in this paragraph. We didn't talk about that in the paper, but. And then some point out that extractive industries, oil and gas and mining industries, are the ones that have encountered the issues in the in application of the guidance in paragraph 78, because in this industry, the decommissioning liability normally has a significant amount. Now, the diversity in practice that they found is because they observe that some follow the methodology as it is in paragraph 78 of IS 36, of deducting the liabilities from the value in use and from the carrying amount. However, they observe that some others do not follow the methodology in paragraph 78 of IS 36 and include the future cash outflows of the decommissioning provision and then discount them, normally using a market rate. But then this creates a mismatch in the discount rates used for value in use and for the liability that is considered. And well, they observe that there are other variations to this approach, which is either adjusting the discount rates or adjusting the cash outflows in doing this cash flow analysis. And, well, they also further noted that it's unclear whether the commissioning provision should be included when using a cash flow model for impairment testing. They asked the Interpretations Committee to clarify that. And also, well, they found the example a little bit simplistic, unclear, and no information is provided on how the present value of the provision is calculated in the example. However, one accounting firm points out that despite of the different approaches that are used in practice, the differences between the use of either approach are immaterial. However, a majority or the rest of the accounting firms, they point out that the issues identified will not be solved by simply amending paragraph 78 as proposed by the submitter. By the way, everybody found the submitter's proposal confusing and not helpful, the amendment that they propose. So these accounting firms are of the view that it should be the ISB, that the Interpretations Committee should refer this issue to the ISB, who should instead carry a broader review of IS 36 in order to address this issue. So the question we're asking today is whether you agree with the staff analysis and whether you agree with the tentative, issuing a tentative agenda decision. Thank you.
Reinhardt? I guess my comments would be consistent with what Denise said. The outreach suggested we certainly find the application of paragraph 70 difficult in practice, and that there are differing views as to how it should be applied. And it's really, as Denise says, it's because of the wording in paragraph 78, where it talks about where the liabilities will be assumed by the purchaser, that you should deduct the carrying amount of that liability in determining the carrying value of the CGU. And the concern is that if you deduct the carrying amount of an ARO or deferred taxes, for that matter, that when you compare that to a discounted value, be that VIU, value in use, I should say, or fair value less cost to dispose, you get a mismatch. And so there are different things people do in practice to try to address that. And so I would agree that this is something that should be addressed by the ISB in to try to eliminate that diversity in practice. I also agree that to address it would take more than just the suggestion by the submitter.
Miguel?
Yes, I assume that the cash generating unit can be a number of different things, but I believe it's not uncommon that it is a business area, for instance, in a company. And then I have difficulties to see how you can separate the cash flows in a practical way between the asset side, so to speak, and the liability side. And then, of course, I realize the point that is made here about the different discounting principles, because we have so many different discounting principles in IFRS, and by that you can have difficulties in coming to the right conclusion if it is an impairment or not. But to say that it is a straightforward, practical, cost-efficient way to separate asset-side cash flows from liability-side cash flows, I don't think it's reasonable, so to speak.
It would be, though, if I'm correct, a fairly special case that you'd even be here, including the liability-side cash flows. Not typically what you'd see. I thought the guidance was fairly restrictive there to say that you don't include the liabilities unless you couldn't get rid of the asset without them.
Yep.
Yes.
Tony?
There are probably lots of industries in which this is not an issue, but there are some industries in which it is a significant issue. Primarily, if you wouldn't be able to sell the asset without the associated decommissioning liability.
Yeah,
I think that's what Reinhardt said, and that's what Denise said. So it's pervasive in those industries. And I think there is a tension and a mismatch. And I think you do see situations in which
the liability determined in accordance with IAS 37 is deducted from the carrying value, and the recoverable amount is then determined by including the cash outflows in the estimate of cash flows, which is then discounted by a different discount rate. And so the impact can be significant, and I think it's not pervasive across industries, but I think it is a pervasive issue. And that's probably the most obvious one. I think Denise said there's clearly also an issue around what do you do with deferred tax if you have a situation in which you could not sell the asset without an associated tax obligation. So I think there is an issue here. I guess I'm not sure it can be dealt with simply through an agenda decision.
John?
Yeah, we do come across this issue in practice in certain industries, as Tony alluded to. I mean, I think there's different views. I think there is a view that even if you deduct the liability, the carrying value of the liability under IAS 37, that when you determine your discount rate for the CGU, it needs to reflect the fact that there's a liability in the CGU as well, and therefore it all trues up. But I think in practice, it probably doesn't always true up. So I do think paragraph 78 is sort of a simplistic way maybe of suggesting how to deal with the issue, which isn't always the way that it's actually applied in practice. But I'm not really sure what we can do about it, other than reiterate that the inclusion of a liability shouldn't be affecting the analysis between value in use and carrying value.
Yep.
It's only there for the purposes of comparing them with fair value less cost of disposal.
Andrew?
Yeah, I'll break this down into two pieces. I think the principles in IAS 36 are clear enough, and I agree with the staff analysis and the tentative agenda decision in as far as that goes. I think the principle is just getting at situations where a market transaction involving the asset would involve also transferring the inseparable liability. So when you're using transaction price data for the fair value less cost of disposal leg of the comparison, you're kind of stuck with that figure. And so IAS 36 says, well, deduct the carrying value under IAS 37 from the carrying value of the asset and exclude the liability-based cash flows from the value in use, deduct the same amount from the value in use. Now, I fully accept there are situations where that might raise practical issues, and there might also be some inconsistency around the margins and how that's done in practice, but that's the second piece. If there's appetite, the ISB might want to take a look at whether that's the right approach, but I think the approach is clear enough in IAS 37. There's been a few mentions of deferred tax. There's, of course, this legendary issue around the gross up of goodwill and intangible assets acquired in a business combination, and that, I think, in reality, we've figured out ways of dealing with that in the real world, but nonetheless, that's still out there, and if there was going to be a broader project, that should be part of the scope of that project.
Bonnie, anything to add?
Not on this one. Thanks, Wayne.
Okay. Okay, the staff has proposed an agenda decision. Let's make this easy. Subject to any obvious wording adjustments that you want to put forward, who would object to the agenda decision? One, two.
Do I have a subject to one?
I think that the concern that exists here is that the impairment test is carried out by comparing apples with oranges. And I wonder if we're going to go with an agenda decision, and I guess I prefer not to, but I recognise that's not the majority view. Could we say something in the agenda decision to emphasise the need to compare apples with apples when you're doing the impairment test? Because I think that's the tension that we see in practice. As John said, you shouldn't, but I think that is what we see in practice. And that if you are going to deduct it, if folks are going to deduct it from the value in use and from the carrying amount, that they deduct the same number?
Which
is what the paragraph in IAS 36 tells you to do.
But I wonder if there's just something that, okay, this is, I'm not going to try and draft it on the while we're talking on the fly, but I do think that is the tension, and it would be helpful to remind people that you need to compare apples with apples.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you give Denise some suggestions on that? And I would have thought that was self-evident, but maybe that's part of the paper I didn't understand, Denise.
Okay.
Okay.
That's what we'll do.
Okay, thank you.